And now, finally, but not leastly, I'd like to invite Dr. Young from New Zealand.
Thank you. I'll take the opportunity to say thank you to our hosts for inviting me from New Zealand today. I hope you can understand my New Zealand accent. It's a bit different to Australia. I'll start with a few very brief comments about the two papers. Dr. Davis's paper I really enjoyed, and I think he's right to point out that there is the return to great power politics, and that China is on the rise. But there's I think in the paper he focused on how that creates a security dilemma, but left out some of the moderators, some of the things in East Asia that could actually moderate that security dilemma. So obviously the economic integration that's going on in the region, the interdependency that China has with the economies in the region, that it has with the United States, and also China's focus on domestic issues. I mean, China may be the second largest economy in the world, but it's actually internally a very fragile economy, and there's a lot of work left to be done. So it does need to have a stable environment. And then finally, the other moderator is, of course, those institutions, those trust-building exercises, things like Track 2 dialogues, but also discussions, diplomacy that China is involved in, the East Asian Forum, etc. These things can actually help moderate some of those security dilemmas. Also, for Dr. Park's presentation, I thought it was an excellent presentation and excellent discussion of the evolution of the hub-and-spoke system, which I think is very, very important for the region, particularly the middle powers building up their own security relationships. The discussion of Australia, Japan, Australia, Korea, I think really gets to the hub of some of the problems with moving the hub and spoke system towards a more multilateral system. And I think over time we need more trust building exercises to move past that. And I think both presentations at the heart were looking at this question of a security dilemma. That as China becomes a larger economy, as its military becomes bigger, then that changes the strategic calculations in the region. And so then the question obviously is, how do you resolve a strategic dilemma? And I think the more discussion needs to be had on that issue. Just quickly, there's obviously things such as trust-building exercises, collective security architecture. And I think there the most important thing is the inclusion of China in those trust-building exercises and in new architecture in the region. And then perhaps even some unilateral limitations put on by countries on the arms build-up. Obviously, with a security dilemma, you increase your military capabilities to enhance your defense, but then that, of course, makes your neighbors feel less secure, and so therefore they do. So if a country can unilaterally limit, and then hopefully the other country will also do that. The second thing is the question was put, well, behind some of the presentations, the question was, is what kind of Asia-Pacific do we actually want? What kind of Asia-Pacific is preferable? And particularly in the first presentation, it seemed that the argument was for the hub-and-spoke system, almost the post-war system. And obviously that's a system that New Zealand, Australia, South Korea, many countries in the region have done very, very well under. It's led to a lot of stability. But then I think another and perhaps more important question would be, is what kind of Asia-Pacific is actually possible? So is that possible to have that system again? And there, obviously, what's changed the most is that China is now part of the region, very much integrated into the region, and has increased its capabilities significantly. So therefore, can we go back to the early 1950s, 1960s, 1970s hub-and-spoke system? And there I think the answer is no, the system needs to evolve. So if the system needs to evolve, the most important question is, how does the system evolve? And one point which I've already made, which I will finish on, is that I think if the system needs to evolve, it needs to evolve with China at the table. Because if China's not at the table, then the system is not going to be a stable system. It's going to be a very conflicting system. And to get China to the table, we need to work to socialize it into the existing international norms and perhaps to strengthen those norms as well, referring to Professor Cotton's point about how those international norms are not always followed by the existing great powers. And we need to create institutions that can strengthen those norms. And perhaps we also need to interpret China's behavior a little bit differently sometimes. So there's basically two schools of thought, for example, on how we interpret China's proposition that the free trade area of the Asia Pacific is put forward, or the Asian Development Investment Bank. So one could argue that China is trying to recreate the international system and to be the leader of that system. So it's a direct contradiction to the existing system. However, if you look at what China's doing there, you could also argue that China is trying to play a leadership role and to emulate existing international norms and existing international institutions. After all, the free trade area of the Asia Pacific was not originally a Chinese idea and has been floated around in APEC for a very, very long time. The Asian Development Investment Bank is not a Chinese socialist idea. It's very much along with the existing development banks that we already have. So I'll leave my comments there.
Hey, thank you.